well, the everybody around this large table.
I would like to say that, especially since this is going to be someone who's independent, and because we need to do it right, that we should focus on people who have been in IG before. This is not going to be on-the-job training. So there were some people who clearly had IG experience or deputy IG experience. There were lots of people with good skills, but I don't want to take a chance on them not being able to create an appropriate office to do the work.
Okay.
So,
if I might just follow up on my previous comments, this website sets forth in certifications three, inspector general, a general inspector general certification, and general certified inspector general investigator, and certified inspector general auditor. And within each of those, I won't go through the list, but each of those has, you know, characteristics that are specific to those titles. So I guess it comes down to what we think is the appropriate blend in terms of the applicants we have. I'd like to just have the benefit of a discussion of what people's thoughts are that before we get into specific applications.
Sure. Okay, well, we'll go down the line and listen to what everybody has to say.
No, I made the comments that
okay.
I wanted to make.
I have a little bit of experience with inspectors general because I was living in Washington, D.C. in the late 80s when the Federal Inspector General Act was passed, and they created from whole cloth dozens and dozens of inspectors general. And the model there at the federal level, and I know several of our applicants come from that model, which is why I wanted to speak to it for a second, is really a three-part concept. It is an audit, financial audit component. It is a criminal investigation component. And it's a program review component. And ordinarily, most of those inspectors general offices break down that way. They have an assistant or deputy inspector general for audit, one for investigations, one for program review. And as you will see that many of the federal-level inspectors general are retired law enforcement, many of them from the Secret Service because they're under federal law allowed to double dip. So they can retire on a federal pension and then go back and take this job. And it sort of fed on itself. The first generation were Secret Service agents, and they told their friends, and they told their friends, and so on and so forth. That being said, if I'm understanding the ordinance and what we're hearing today, the criminal investigation component is really not part of this job. That's what Mr. McAuliffe and Sheriff Bradshaw and other people do. So personally, I discounted that experience in trying to evaluate the candidates here. I myself felt it was much more important to focus on the program review function and the audit function, but even within those two subject matter areas, I thought a good program review person is harder to find than a good auditor. I mean, I think there's lots and lots of really strong audit people out there, and if the inspector general felt they had weakness in that area, it would be easier to find a strong auditor to head up the audit component than maybe to find a program person, but also consistent with what Dr. Fiore was saying and what we discussed about the executive director at our other meeting. I think the most important thing is management experience, the ability to set up an office from whole cloth. Personal integrity is utmost given the independence of the office, not just actual personal integrity, but the appearance of impartiality and integrity was very important to me. And those were some of the factors I put into play in evaluating the candidates. Ma'am?
Counselor?
I always second everything that's been said by Dr. Fiore and Mr. Reinhart so far. I found, and I struggled myself with what the IG does because we already have constitutional officers doing at least a part of the functions of the historic IG position, meaning we have the clerk who's also the comptroller that does one part of the function of the IG. And we have the state attorney, Mr. McAuliffe, with us today that at least does a part of the historical function of the IG. So it seemed to me in trying to interpret the ordinance, and Judge Rogers and Mr. Reinhart will agree with me that one of the things, and Mr. McAuliffe as well, one of the things we're taught as lawyers is when you've got something that's a little gray, you try to interpret in a fashion which gives effect to all parts that are already in existence when that ordinance or law is passed, meaning that this IG, I think, has to function in a realm where the state attorney has to function effectively, the clerk and comptroller function has to function effectively. The county commission's legislative and policymaking authority has to function effectively. And taking all those three items into account, I started coming down on the side of the position described by Mr. Reinhart, where a more systems intensive person that can offer advice to the county commission with regard to issues that the county commission may have in terms of functions or policies or systems that can work with the audit department within the county commission as well as the clerk and comptroller's office and assist those two, and also assist Mr. McAuliffe in acting as state attorney and enforcing the laws here in Palm Beach County. So it's really a conglomeration of jobs, which this inspector general, as drafted by the county commission, the position is really a conglomeration. But it seems that out of those three functions that Mr. Reinhart spoke of, probably the most important, at least in the constitutional framework that we have in this county, keeping in mind that the comptroller has not given up its audit functions in this county, is that the inspector general be more, for lack of a better phrase, systems-oriented or process-oriented, as opposed to the other two functions. Now, having said all that, Mr. McAuliffe and Mr. Reinhart have done an extraordinary job over the last several years ridding us of some of the more low-hanging fruit of criminality that we may have had. But
I assume you mean only when I was still in the prosecutor's office.
Yes, that's exactly what I meant.
Okay.
But the function may change. So we have to remain flexible, and the IG needs to be responsive to the citizens and the needs of the citizens, because if it turns out that the convolutions of the last few years didn't get rid of the bad apples, then that inspector general has to have the capability to step more into a law enforcement function to assist Mr. McAuliffe. And, you know, this is not certainly – Mr. McAuliffe has a public integrity unit, which is very well-staffed, and Mr. Johnson, I understand, does a very good job. But I think if there were a systemic failure of ethics here, I think Mr. McAuliffe would probably have no problem taking assistance from an inspector general who was consistent with the goals of the state attorney's office.
Okay, I didn't look for jobs, accountants or lawyers or anything, like Mr. Reinhart said. I look for people with integrity and their background. That guy may have been a good IG, but if he just dealt with an insurance company, reducing fraud in the insurance company, and didn't know anything about municipal governments and the problems that create us being in this position we're in, then I didn't rank him as high as somebody else who may have had lesser credentials. So I wasn't really sold on whether he was an attorney or an accountant or anything, because I didn't expect him to be able to do all of those things at peak performance. So he hires bright attorneys and auditors and CPAs to do the work that he wants to do. So my concern was our problem arose because of our flaws in our municipal system. So I wanted somebody who could maybe address that problem, our political social system that we have here, and the integrity that exists or not exists here, as opposed to somebody who is works for the income tax department or who's trying to reduce in-house fraud from large corporations and things like that. So that's sort of the guideline that I use. But all of them we have a lot to choose from. But to answer your question, I wasn't concerned so much about an attorney or a CPA.
Well, I will, just for your information, say that I concur with everyone. From my own perspective, I'm aware, and I think everyone should be aware, that governmental accounting is quite a bit different than private sector accounting. So, and to some degree, maybe not totally, it presupposes a knowledge of how government accounting works. perhaps, maybe not, if you're looking at a program function. But I would like to ask you, though, whether you feel the Inspector General will be a part of your investigative arm or an integral part of your investigative arm to the extent public corruption issues come up.
Yes. John, maybe you want me to skip over Jennifer, then we'll end on Jennifer. Mm-hmm. The short answer is yes. I do think I am counting on, or anticipating, I should say, that the IG will constitute a pipeline of referrals to my office when an audit or a look or an evaluation uncovers a factual predication of possible criminal wrongdoing. They then would refer it to my office or the U.S. Attorney's office, and then that would be a feeder. One of the things that we don't have in this community is a well-developed pipeline system in the local criminal justice system for those types of referrals. That's why historically over the last few years you've seen the FBI investigate and the U.S. Attorney's Office prosecute. You know all well my commitment as a candidate and now as an office holder to be active in this area, and I've always envisioned that this would be a pipeline, maybe not the primary pipeline, but yes, it would have some capacity to refer matters to my office for follow-up investigation, vetting, and possible prosecution. Now, in Miami-Dade, what Chris Mazzella would say, and in fact we heard him say it, Robin was there when we were at this roundtable discussion in Fort Lauderdale last week, and Chris actually, and it was truly a kind of a slip of the tongue, but I caught it, and I purposely kind of, in a friendly way, called him out. He actually was talking about that he had prosecuted this case or that case. Tell me if I'm overstating it, Robin. And I said, well, you know, Chris, just a friendly reminder, I think that would be Kathy Rundle's office or Jeff Sloman or the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they actually are the prosecuting authority. And he said, oh, yeah, of course. But it does bring to mind that that over time, I think the IG's office in Miami-Dade, they have cross-sworn. Actually, I think two or three attorneys in the IG's office are specially sworn as assistant state attorneys in Kathy Fernandez-Rundle's office, and they actually sort of can stay with the matter after that referral is made. How that will develop here, who knows? If I have an adequate in-house investigative capability, it may be that we say thanks, we'll take it from here. If not, it may be something that the office does jointly. Although I will say, as focused as I am on my statutory and constitutional duties, I hope and envision the IG will really sort of pay for itself on the efficiency and process front. That it will justify its existence and all a lot of these folks' time and effort and our collective efforts in looking for ways to improve governance, that much of it will not be. In fact, Chris would I think concur, I don't want to speak for him, that in my discussions that 80% of what the IG does is non-criminal. If that's a rough guideline, only 20% of it would relate to and be a pipeline candidate for criminal referrals. Now,
A fair amount was incompetence.
A fair amount was, right. Just, hey, this is kind of looking crazy. Why is this that way? And if it's done respectfully but professionally, I think that's where you get improvements, when you have this objective, removed, one-step, two-step removed, objective, critical eye, but respectful. And I think that, if I want to make a comment, it's the IG, to be successful here, it's a startup operation. It's going to need to prove its value and investment. So it has to be someone who's comfortable with building something but not creating a fiefdom. And when we interview these folks, I'm going to ask them, you know, this isn't for your status. This isn't, you're not an elected official. Your only agenda is to help improve other people's operations and to be that honest, fair evaluator. And so I think we need to look for someone who's very comfortable in their skin, not trying to prove anything to anyone, good working collaborator, but but in their position, removed from having to directly report and answer in a chain of command. And, you know, interestingly, we've got at least I put 11 down. I miscounted, but I can't. I couldn't bring myself to take one out. You know, we've got a really interesting set of folks. I must say I was biased in favor of folks who were currently playing the role of IG, thinking that they would come into the discussion with us better prepared to explain their sensibilities and knowing what they were getting into, and that we would really focus on, well, this is not, I mean, we have the IG for HUD. I mean, that's a, you know, that pretty big staff, hundreds and hundreds of employees. It could be a great thing, or it could be completely inappropriate. You know, I mean, knows the function.
Let's wait till we get there.
Yeah, right? You know what I mean? I do anticipate a pipeline. I want them to have a really comfortable sense of self, which may mean that they've achieved something in their professional, personal lives, and they're not, their agenda is to build a great, efficient IG's office.
Okay. Ms. Lawless.
It probably doesn't surprise anybody here that the Public Defender's Office wasn't necessarily focused on
the
I'm sorry. It probably doesn't surprise anybody that the Public Defender's Office wasn't focused on the enforcement aspect of things. I really don't have much to add to what's already been said. I think it's somebody with proven independence is important. I would wonder, though, if it would be possible if that Miami-Dade Inspector General could come talk about the evolution of his position to the group prior to us doing the interviews and making the selection, maybe hearing what
shouldn't be a problem
that person's gone through. But I agree that
y'all don't mind coming back Sunday. I'm sure.
You know, system, process, evaluation with the goal of improving governance is what I see that position.
All right, let's move on then,
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir.
Could I just, if you don't mind, the One thing to keep in mind is you're going to want to maximize resources that are available to the Inspector General. And we talked briefly about the internal auditor earlier. And as Mr. McAuliffe indicated, that office and the governance of that office is being changed dramatically. In fact, the County Commission approved the amendments to the ordinances last Tuesday. So there will now be an outside independent governance board for the internal auditor, and the internal auditor's job is expanded fairly significantly to include a lot of performance and waste-related issues. I wouldn't ever try to take away any of the authority that's been vested in the Inspector General, because ultimately that's where the rubber meets the road. But I do believe that a lot of the functions that the Inspector General that we've talked about here in evaluating programs and assessing changes that should be made to in county government will be some of the role played by the internal auditor. The Inspector General has the say-so, but I also believe that the Inspector General and the internal auditor, as well as the executive director, the ethics commissioner, are all going to want to work together in figuring out how these tasks are best managed.
Okay. We're also going to have somebody from the clerk's office. I got a call from Clerk Ms. Brock, who says that they handle the budget and they have some peeking order with what we're doing here, and they'd like to come in and talk to us at some time. Okay. And I told her we'd make arrangements for that.
Because
all right.
At the end of the day, if the IG is independent, the IG gets to decide what the IG does.
Sure.
So we really have to understand what it is we want from the IG when we're doing the interviews. So I think we understand more clearly what Mr. McAuliffe's role is. I'm still not clear on how it will interface with the audit committee. So perhaps the first step is for us to have a copy of that revised ordinance. Is that possible?
Sure. We'll make sure
we'll take care of that.
That we can.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on. We have another meeting scheduled, so let's go try to get to Mrs. Yenda.
Would you update to include my
yes,
email to you?
Speak into the microphone, please, Doctor.
Thank you. just want to make sure that you update it. Thanks.
Yeah, I asked Mrs. Yen to try to get a feel for what everybody had, see if we couldn't reduce the list even further. So that's what she's going to tell us now, what her opinion was with our selections, primary selections.
Okay, thank you. To date, Palm Beach County HR had provided you the selection committee with packets that included all the employment applications and resumes and other materials that were received, the job description, a sample training and experience rating criteria, and an applicant list demographic info sheet. We also provided, for information purposes to you, the synopsis of the method used last week by the Commission on Ethics to shortlist candidates for the executive director position, just as a point of information or a point of reference to start from. We then surveyed each of you for a top group. We'd asked for 10 or so, and the number varied, but we were somewhere in the range of 12 across the board. I had heard from five of you by the time we produced this frequency table that you have in front of you. So it doesn't include everybody's, but we can certainly add a couple of names there. Scott receives one more vote.
Let's do this.
Here, do you want one?
So with this frequency table, it's simply organized by the largest number of votes to the smallest.
More for Scott, though.
One more for Scott. They appear. John W., he had three votes out of the five who had responded, but now has an additional.
I'm sorry. Who was that?
John
W. Oh, John Scott. You're still talking about Scott. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
He has three, but now he has four. Another, it would be Reddick, who was...
Does not show on this list. Oh, does
should
show.
Be.
Okay, I'm sorry. Yes. So he'll move into the two category.
Yes.
Two or one.
Wait, he's on the one?
Is he on the one or the zero?
He's on,
is that
he's on the ones currently.
He's on the ones.
Okay. So the list on the back of that page all had one vote as well?
Oh, no. Actually, that's zero. A zero. Okay. So he would be a one.
Okay.
Reddick would be one.
I don't see Reddick.
Timothy Reddick, R-E-D-D-O.
He's on page two. It's in alpha order. Everybody who had zero votes votes at the point at which this was created.
Got it.
Okay.
We have another vote for Geiser. G-E-I-Z-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is my pick.
So Geiser has gone from two to three.
Well, tell me where that one is.
It's in the orange section.
Third name from the top in the orange section.
Yep.
Eric.
So he's gone from two to three.
Come on.
The next one with an additional vote is Lober, and that's in the top group. We'll go from a five to a six.
I only get six and five people voting.
And we're adding seven. One more.
Oh, okay, that's right, seven. We have seven voting now.
And last, an additional vote will be added to Dunning, who originally did not have any votes, did not appear on anyone's top list before. So it would be a one for John P. Dunning, who would be on that second page.
Dark horse candidate.
I like to mix it up.
Wait, are these Robins? We're not going to out you on this.
It's okay with me. My head was in a different place. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Long you're in the minority.
Okay.
I'm sure my head was in a different place.
We have some numerical ideas to where we're going now. What is your pleasure? Would you like to take all the fives and fours? Or
no, I'd like us to be able to make some comments before
okay.
we do that.
All right.
Okay.
And these are not personal comments, yeah.
At this frequency table, do we now have all seven of us?
You don't have Jennifer, right?
I just gave mine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jennifer
made a little note.
We have all seven now, and I'd like to narrow the group down to...
We haven't called those out.
Let's call it Jennifer's out,
right.
too.
Oh, okay.
Then we'll have a total vote.
Okay. That was a six members' votes that we just did. Okay. Now we have a seventh members' votes.
All right. Let's see if anyone gets seven.
We have one more vote for Donahue, who's in the top group. So they will move up.
He's a six now?
Six for him. Okay.
We have a vote, another vote for Greg Picor in the blue group.
Okay. It's five for him.
Five. We have another vote for John Scott.
Five for him.
Who's gone from four to five. Correct. We have an additional vote for Stacy Chados in the orange group, who has gone from two to three. We have an additional vote for Tina Seymour, also in the orange group, going from two to three. One more vote for Robert C. Boyles, who's in the one group, so it will now be two. The next vote was for Gerald Coplin, also in the ones group, K-O-P-L-I-N. We'll go from one to two. An additional vote for Arthur Sinai, also in the one group. We'll go from one to two. And an additional vote for Horace Nwachukwu, who's in the one group, N-W-A-C-H. We'll go from one to two. And an additional vote for Timothy Reddick, who will go from one to two, was originally a zero. Then we added a one with a sixth panel member, and now another one with a seventh panel member. So Reddick has two total. And that would be it. That's all seven members' votes.
Okay. What's your pleasure? If we took all the sixes, fives, and so forth, we'd have about 13. We took everybody with sixes, fives, or threes, and fours. I think we'd be about 13, is that right? And I'm thinking now about in terms of people we actually want to narrow down for interview, or if anybody has anybody who was a two that you would really like to have come in for an interview, then we can do that at this
time. Some of them are coming for the ED interview. Are we allowed to ask them other questions, or that's a different day?
Oh, really? Are there overlap applicants?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
There are a number of them. Chados, Reddick.
Really?
There's another one. I can't remember which one it is.
I would like...
Klein.
I'd like to know who's a dual candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Chados is.
Okay.
I think Ms. Yan.
I'm looking. Let's see. In the top group. Chados, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Fiore, I think the answer to your question while Leilani is looking at it is that I would recommend you do two completely separate and distinct processes with no overlap.
Okay.
Well, in terms of saving the taxpayers a little bit of money, can we stop the...
Adjourn that meeting and go to another?
Yes, exactly, because Ms. Chados would be coming from New Mexico, as I recall.
Mr. Reddick comes from Philadelphia.
I know.
Well, you could do your selection processes 2 days in a row, you know, back to back.
Okay. I understand the reason.
Or day and night.
Gary Geiser was on the dual group.
Geiser?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe he was with our short list.
Yeah, I don't believe he was.
He's a three on this one.
I don't believe he was selected for an interview in the other
When panel. I looked at him again, I said, gee, why aren't we interviewing him for ED?
All right. Chados with three is in your top group.
Okay. Fabulous, but she...
Say that again.
Chados has three total votes.
Yes.
Across the
panel. he's the only one in the top, or she?
Yes, she also appears on the short list for executive director.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Aaron Geiser does as well.
No, Aaron Geiser does not.
Okay.
There were some twos that were
right. Reddick is a two.
And so is Sinai, Arthur.
Right.
Or
Sinai's not Sinai. Being interviewed. He did apply for.
Oh yeah. Right. Okay.
Well, the good news is that there seems to be, you know, there's definitely a core group that most of us looked at as, okay, well, that looks like the background, and at least yeah. on paper.
Right. Yeah, we have some very good applicants.
Mm-hmm. I have some concerns about independence and also some other kinds of concerns. So I don't know how we sort that out.
Well, hopefully you'll be able, when we see them and talk to them, I think that's where you're going to find out the most about them.
I think the way we handled the other process was that we sort of went around, and if we kind of presumed that if you were in the top 9 or 10 people, that you would be invited for an interview unless someone felt strongly one way or the other. And I thought that, for personally, I thought that was a productive way to go around. And there may be someone who's a 2 who someone wants to advocate for. There may be someone who's a 5 who someone has concerns about. And I personally would just like to hear that before we
let's do that.
Decide who to bring in.
Let's decide. What are we going to do? Cut off at 3? Do everybody down to 3?
How many does that leave?
How many would that give us?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
That would give us 12. We could make that the cutoff point and then go to Mr. Reinhardt's suggestion to see if anybody has a 2 or a 1 that he or she would just like to hear.
Mr. Chair, of course, the selection committee do whatever it likes, but 12 is a lot.
Yeah.
That would make for a very long day or two.
Yeah, well,
but
we've been talking. Does anybody want to eliminate anybody? We're talking about adding.
Yes, I would like to eliminate.
Okay, who would you like to strike?
Again, these are not personal issues. These are going with our core mission. DCF is a disaster. I don't think that's a controversial.